Hello and welcome to the Scottish Song Guide with Thesaurus. I'm Marty.
And I'm Douglas.
And today we're going to talk about Dumbarton's drums.
Dumbarton's drums, they sound sae bonny when they remind me.
So Marty, can you give us a bit of background about how you came to Dumbarton's drums? It's obviously a song that when we play it, you take the lead on it, you sing it, yeah. You play the main guitar part.
Well, it's a funny one, actually. I was thinking about this. And I thought, well, it was the Gene Redpath version that I knew about. My mother was very keen on Gene Redpath and I knew that song. And then I realised that actually the version that I learned was definitely the Corrie's version, because it's the version that has the male voice sort of speaking and changes the Johnny to Jeannie. So I must have known the Corrie's version first,
right,
and then found out about the Gene Redpath version later. But I was aware of kind of both. And it's one of those weird ones when it's almost like I've always known this song. And I don't even really remember learning it, but it was certainly one of my mum's favourites. When we talked about doing it, you certainly were able to, you know, you had a sort of a connection with it as well.
Yeah, it's one which, funnily enough, I hadn't heard before. About sort of, late 90s probably. And I'd just bought these books, which I know you have as well. There's a collection of three volumes, Traditional Folk Songs and Ballads of Scotland, collected by a guy named John Loseberg, three volumes. I actually bought them, believe it or not, I think at the visitor centre at Culloden. And these are really simple little books, really compact things. They've 40 songs in each with a tune and the basic chords, and there's little notes on some of them. And at the time, I went round to my friends. His mum was staying with him. She wasn't very well. And he'd said, oh, would you bring those wee Scottish song books that you have round? I'm sure my mum would like to have a wee look through them, maybe sing something. So we went round, and my friend's mum, it was her that picked out Dumbarton's drums, and she was saying, oh, I used to love this song. Her husband's name had been Johnny, so it had quite a connection to her. So she did it, and I sat with the book and actually learned it from the book and from her singing it. So it was a really nice sort of way to learn it. And then later, unfortunately, after she died, I played at her funeral, which again was a lovely little connection to the song that I've got.
It's one that seems particularly popular, maybe it's because it's a female voice, that seems particularly popular with the female members of our audience, because I'm always kind of amused when we sing, when I say, oh, you know, come on, sing this one, sing this with me or something. The singing in Dumbarton's drums is notably higher pitched than it is, because there's more women that know the words, I think. I mean, that's a massive generalisation, of course, but it's certainly very, very popular.
Yeah, and it's a lovely arrangement, I think, that we do of it. You kind of have guitar arpeggios, just plucked guitar, and then we've got quite a nice harmony in the chorus,
yeah.
And there's a little bit of guitar that I do. So there's actually not an awful lot that I do in the song. It's pretty subtle.
I always like the harmony you do in this, because I always think that it sounds very Everly Brothers for some reason. I don't really know why. It's just, there's something about it that I really like.
Yeah, it's a little bit different to some of the other harmonies we do. But yeah. I think, there's quite a range in the main melody in it. And I think, when I played it in the key that it was in that book that I mentioned, which was F. But I think we play it in G. We play it in C, in fact.
We play it in C, yeah. When I learned it, I just learned it that way, and I learned it playing arpeggios. And I'm sorry for not being very inventive, but I've pretty much played it the way I've always known it.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. It works really well.
Well, that's true.
Martin told the hour of pleasure, a song of love that knows no measure. When Jeannie sings her songs to me, Dumbarton's drums, they sound sae bonny when they remind.
So we've talked a little bit about us coming to this, but can you just go into some of the themes of the song itself?
Yeah, well, I mean, The first thing to say, I think, about Dumbarton's drums is that it's essentially a tale of two songs, because there's the more modern one and the sort of ancient one. But both of them have the same theme. It's a love song where a woman sort of expressing her love for a soldier who's a caddie or a cadet. So a classic old folk song kind of theme there of the woman and the soldier. And on the original version, the lyrics are quite different. There's sort of three stanzas to the first one, but each stanza is split in two. So it starts off and they're quite similar. The old one's quite similar to the modern one. Dumbarton's drums beat bonny o, when thy mind me, oh my dear Johnny o, how happy am I when my soldier is by, while he kisses and blesses his Annie o. So that's in the original one. And then as we go through the song, there are other parts which are quite similar in the two versions. And basically she's extolling the virtues of her caddie, of her soldier. I particularly like the part where she says, my love is a handsome laddie-o, genteel, but ne'er foppish nor gaudy-o, which is always important. You never want that in a soldier.
My love is a handsome laddie-o, genteel, but ne'er foppish nor gaudy-o. No commissions are dear, yet I'll buy him one this year, or he shall serve no longer a caddie.
Interestingly, in both versions, she talks about how he will go on to greater things and become a captain. Now, in the modern version, that's actually the verse which we don't sing, because we use one of the verses as a chorus. Yep. And we miss the last verse, which is, in the modern one, my Johnny is a handsome laddie, and though he is Dumbarton's caddie, someday I'll be a captain's lady when Johnny tends his vows to me. So it suggests there that he will go on to become a captain. But in the original version, she actually says, though commissions are dear, yet I'll buy him one this year, for he shall serve no longer a caddie-o. So she's actually going to buy him the commission to make him a captain in the original version. Now, whether that disappeared from the modern version because that practice disappeared sort of in the 1870s or whatever, I don't know. But
It's interesting, though, because it also suggests that she's got cash and he doesn't, which means that maybe she's slightly older as well.
Yeah, there's also, I think, just when I was going over the original lyric, there are certain things which put me in mind a little bit of Bonnie Lass of Fife.
Yes, me too.
Where it's, about your daddy was mentioned, right, and becoming a captain's lady and so on. So there are those little links which...
Which crop up time and again in lots of different folk songs when there's a similar setting. You get almost stock lines.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Four Marys has them, and in terms of these sort of stock lines about, little did my mother know when first she cradled me what terrible thing was going to happen to me. And here you get the soldier, as you said, the soldier and the lady thing. And then it's, I'll be a captain's lady. Farewell, my friends and my daddy. Take a last farewell of your daddy-o. In the Bonnie Lass of Fife, so it's really similar. But I noticed when we were looking at the earliest lyrics, there's also the line where she says, and it doesn't make it into the later version, but it's, while guarded in his arms, I'll fear no war's alarms, neither danger nor death shall e'er fright me, oh. And if you think about it, when this was published, so it's published in 1724, this is on the back of the sort of 1685 is when the Dumbarton stuff's happening, the early Dumbarton stuff's happening. Then you have the Jacobite Rebellion 1715, you have another one in 1719. So actually, when someone's looking for protection, the idea that this guy can look after me, has much more resonance in the 1720s than it does in latter day. And like you said, with the practice of buying commissions maybe gone, maybe that's another reason why the condensed version comes out, because it's just not as relevant. It kind of, the modern version becomes more of a sort of a straight ahead love song.
Kisses and blesses his Annie-o, tis a soldier alone can delight me, oh, for his graceful looks do invite me, oh, while guarded in his arms, I'll fear no war's alarms, neither danger. special air fried meal.
It should be said as well that the Dumbarton that's mentioned, it's not the town of Dumbarton, which is a little place outside Glasgow. Well, a little town. It's a reasonably sized town outside Glasgow. But the Dumbarton that's referenced in the song is the Earl of Dumbarton, who was a leader of the regiment that went on to become the Royal Scots, the Royal Regiment of Foot. So he was commander of that regiment back in the 1680s. They were brought back, I think, to put down the Argyll and Monmouth Rebellion in 1685. But that's who the Dumbarton is. It doesn't refer to the town.
Yeah, it's like a bit like Bonnie Dundee in that people make assumptions. But again, it's the person, not the place.
Yeah, yeah. So we mentioned, Marty, the two versions. Can you tell us a little bit about when it first appeared?
It was published in Alan Ramsay's Tea Table Miscellany in 1724. And Ramsay himself was, he was about in his 40s when he published it. He started off as a wig maker and became a bookseller. He was quite a successful wig maker, apparently. And but made a good go of it, and then became a bookseller and no mean writer in his own right. He's really interested. Ramsay has always been really interested in kind of in folk songs, especially sometimes the kind of bawdier, edgier ones. And certainly Robert Crawford writes about him and says that he this is because he was born and brought up in Lanarkshire. And he was educated up to the age of 15 and then left. He never went to university. And at the time, the universities, this is the very early, sort of, well, very late 17th century, very early 18th. And the universities are still really influenced by the Kirk. So there's kind of what is proper, if you like. And the Kirk were pretty came down pretty hard on some of the theatrical productions, and they didn't like any bawdiness at all. So because Ramsay never went through that system, he almost didn't get that filter put in, so he became really interested in Scottish productions and the productions of Scottish poets. And Dumbarton's Drums, I think, is one of those, and certainly probably one of his, actually.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be any mention of any other authors.
No.
So it does seem to be Ramsay's.
It seems to be his, absolutely. So the Tea Table Miscellany was published the same year as the Evergreen. Ramsay published The Evergreen as well, which is a collection of much older Scottish songs, which then gets picked up and set to music, many of them for the Orpheus Caledonius.
Yeah, the Tea Table Miscellany, although it has songs in it, the songs don't have any music, do they? It's just the words that are in there.
Yeah, I mean, the songs are often, they say, to the tune of, and will tell you what the tune should be. But they weren't particularly worried about printing the music in that version. In later, subsequent versions, when it was printed in different collections, it was. The first tune, as you said, is the one with the longer one. That's the one where it's all about handsome. He's a handsome laddie, never foppish nor gaudy, all that stuff. And the rhythm is very, very different. And I think from the lyrics of the early version, you can tell that the tune it's being played to is not the one necessarily that we're singing it to, because the rhythm of the lines is completely different. The number of stresses in the lines is different. So can you maybe talk a little bit about the tune?
Yeah, well, you mentioned the Orpheus Caledonius, and that was where the tune for it first appeared under the title Dumbarton's Drums. And that was collected by William Thompson, and that volume, volume 2, was published in 1733. And I mean, this Orpheus Caledonius included lots of tunes which were staples for the next 150 years in collections. Things like the Bonnie Earl of Murray, Loch Aber, Gilderoy, and so on. So the tune appears there under the title Dumbarton's Drums and has a very, very sort of simple one-line bass accompaniment to it. Now, there's no direction in terms of how it should be played there, but when it appears next, which is in 1742, in a collection of old Scots tunes, which was put together by the Tuscan composer Francis Bersanti, in there it's got a much fuller arrangement, and it has a direction slow, indicating how it should be played, which is at odds with how that tune is often being played, because the tune itself is quite often used as a country dance tune, and it's also, we mentioned the Royal Scots Regiment earlier, it's also their march past, So when you hear their version of it, it's a really kind of upbeat one. But originally, it seems, certainly from 1742, it was designed to be played as a slow song. Mentioned that the tune first appeared in 1733, but it's fairly closely based on a much earlier tune called I Serve a Worthy Lady, and that tune appeared in this thing I think we've mentioned on the podcast before, the Skene Manuscript, which was basically a book of tunes for the mandor, which was like a lute, and that appeared in I think 1818, but it was found at the bottom of a big kind of trunk, and
like all the best manuscripts.
yeah, and it had been put together at some point between 1615 and 1630, and was in the collection of the Skenes, who had a castle just actually near where Edinburgh Airport is now. So yeah, the tune I Serve a Worthy Lady was in that manuscript. And that's what Dumbarton's Drums is based fairly closely on. So, you know, it's fascinating when you look at those...
That is particularly interesting if you think about what we were just saying a wee bit earlier about the fact that she's maybe a bit older than him and has a bit more status than him because she's got the cash to buy him a commission in the original version. If the tune is I Serve a Worthy Lady, it actually you can see why whoever wrote the lyric, probably Ramsay, actually was working from that particular tune, why they would have thought that was an appropriate tune this lyric.
Yeah, so that was the starting point, it seems, for the tune. But I was going to say, you know, it's fascinating when you think of these tunes which have been played for that long. I mean, that is, the Skene Manuscript was then put together in a book in 1838 by William Donne called Ancient Scottish Melodies. And it's fascinating to go through that and have a look at these tunes and actually play these things which were written down anyway,
yeah,
you know, 200 years before that. You know, it gives you that real sort of connection to the past.
It really does. And it's like reading a really, really old text, because you get that weird sense that someone is sitting next to you, talking to you. It's like time travel. And it's really exciting. And that's one of the exciting things, I think, about some of the great folk songs, that they've lasted this length of time and have been popular for so long.
Yeah, definitely. Dumbarton's drums beat bonny, oh, when I mind me, oh, my dear Johnny, oh, how happy am I when my soldier is back. So that was the sort of original tune, but as we said, it's kind of a tale of two songs in some senses.
Yeah.
So the tune that we know, that we play, is very different from that, as you mentioned. So how did that come about?
Well, that tune, that's what we'll call it, the modern tune for sake of ease, but it's not really a modern tune. It may not be as old as that one, but it's still quite old. That came into kind of the Scottish folk revival, kind of 20th century folk revival, via Jean Redpath. And she said that she was taught it whilst perched on top of Bob Beer's Psaltery in a Volkswagen camper van going into New York in 1961. Now, the Beer's family are quite interesting in all of this. And if anyone is of a mind to, there's a Pete Seeger show, I think it's called Rainbow Quest, from 1966, that's actually in archive.org. And the whole thing's there. It's like an hour-long live music show.
Right.
And some of the direction is interesting. It's really kind of homespun. So someone starts talking and they've got their back to the camera and all this kind of stuff. But the music is fantastic.
A bit like our podcast.
I wasn't throwing too many stones. That's why we're not filming it. So anyway, the Beers family, which is Bob Beers and his wife and his daughter Martha, they sang Dumbarton's drums. It was one of their kind of key pieces. In fact, they're almost their sort of theme tune. And that is to the modern tune and the kind of what we'll call the modern arrangement, the sort of shorter verses. But Bob Beers, the reason why I'm mentioning the Pete Seeger show is because it's a beautiful version. He plays the psaltery, which is like a, it's like a kind of harpsichord without the keys. It's a precursor to the harpsichord, which he claims David played and Solomon played, and there was one in Solomon's temple. But he plays this thing and they sing this beautiful tune. But just before that, on Pete Seeger's show, he says, this is an old family tune called Dumbarton's Drums that was brought to this country by his daughter's great-great-grandmother, Annie McManus. And he says that his family were, you know, they had many fiddlers in the family and they would always have Saturday music nights. And so they all just play. He learned this in this at the family fireside, if you like.
So this is, Bob Beers is saying this in the 60s, and that was his, did you say his great-grandmother?
Or his great-great, he says, it's, well, he actually, in the thing, he says it's his daughter's great-great-great-grandmother. But then he later so on suggests, yeah, so anyway, I worked it out. I reckon it's somewhere mid-19th century.
Right, okay.
But that's when she came across, presumably, Annie McManus. So I think it's fairly safe to assume that that in itself is an old tune and probably came out of Scotland as well. So it's a question of exactly when these things, or whether it just morphed. You know, it came in as the original one and then just gradually morphed as they played it and sort of as the oral tradition works, you know, through generations of the family.
Yeah.
Gene Redpath gets it from the Beers family. Beers family were really successful. I mean, they played the Christmas Day concert at the White House in 1969. And they were really pretty successful in their day, and then unfortunately, sadly, Bob Beers died in his early 50s in a car crash. But they used to host a folk music festival at Fox Hollow in New York State. And there's a reminiscence online. Someone talks about it and said talks about it being freezing and usually pouring with rain, despite the fact that it was during the summer. And he says, this person says, and of course, no evening was really complete without the Beers family doing their sweet old-time rendition of Dumbarton's drums.
Oh, lovely, eh?
So I think, you know, like I said, they were pretty successful in their day. And I think that they were obviously, you know, Gene Redpath listened well, clearly, and knew a good thing when she heard it and brought it back. And then the Corries take it up and other people take it up, and this becomes the kind of standard version of Dumbarton's drums. So it crossed the Atlantic and came back again slightly different.
Munton and Flea, Dumbarton's drums, they sound sae bonny when they remind me of my genie, such fond delight.
Well, we hope you've enjoyed our little whistle-stop guide to Dumbarton's drums, the old version and the not-quite-so-old version. If you'd like to hear a full version of the song, then our recording of it is on our album, Auld Lang Syne, so you can get that over at our website. You can also find some of our resources and further reading on the podcast website, which is scottishsongguide.com. And we will be back to talk about another song very soon. So goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
See you later. Bye.
Does steal upon me when Johnny kneels and kisses me. When Johnny sings his songs to you.